Blog Talk Radio.
$5,000 and a bonus.
You're broken down and tired. So living life on the merry-go-round. And you can't find a fighter. But I see it in you, so we can walk it out. We gon' walk it out and ooh, all day. And all eyes like the day, all eyes like the rain.
Thousand times again. No matter what, we give ourselves a shot until the party's over. I am grateful to have you folks across the country and around the world to tune in today to a day that is a gift, because we don't know about tomorrow. And we can't worry about yesterday, because yesterday has already forgotten about us. I want you folks to just join in a warm welcome in your own special way through this cyberspace, and welcome Dr. Tamitra Clark to the show. Good evening, Dr. Clark.
Good evening. Good morning. Good afternoon, wherever you may be joining us from. Welcome, welcome, welcome to NUM Is Not Enough, where we have the conversation, sometimes a heavy conversation, about grief and loss and how to embrace the pain and live life with intention and purpose to honor that loss. So here we are once again to continue that conversation. And tonight we were going to get into, because it came up last week, children and kids, and do they grieve, and what does their grief process look like when they're in a moment of bereavement and when they're mourning? Is there a difference? Do they even grieve? But before we get to that, I understand that we have a question that needs to be addressed tonight, Dr. Brown.
Yes. Our email came in. I found it to be extremely touching and challenging. I'm hoping that you can tackle this. Let me back up. I don't hope so. I know that you'll be able to shed some light and give us a little bit better understanding, because of not just your credentials, but because also of your faith and your understanding of your fellow man. Yes, I was pausing and delaying this one, ladies and gentlemen, but it went something like this. I gave someone some advice, not me, this is what the person who wrote me said, and I think I might have messed up, because they wound up killing themselves, taking their life. So now, instead of trying to help someone else through their grief and loss, now I'm the patient going through the grief and loss. I have no idea what to do. Can you help me?
Wow. That is definitely a loaded question. This is what I think about. Sometimes when people are so deep into their process and so deep into their depression, so into their hurt and their pain, nothing that we say or do is going to matter, because they don't have the emotional capacity and bandwidth and fortitude to hear what's being said. At some point, they have shut themselves off. And so an act occurred that now they're no longer here. But you can't really hold yourself responsible for that act because it wasn't you that did the act. When we are coming from a place of sincerity and we are coming from a place of being empathic and we're sitting with someone and we are in our best intentions offering advice, we really are not responsible for how that information is received and what's done with that information. And so if someone is not able to take the information and to process it, you're not responsible for that. Maybe we can look at, well, dang, maybe I said it in a different way. Maybe I could have said it in a different way. Maybe there was something else I could have done. You're going to always play those in your mind. That's part of that bargaining phase that we go through, right? The woulda, coulda, shouldas, if I only, maybe I should have, I should not have, or maybe I could have did this different, maybe I could have done that different. You will drive yourself insane trying to do that. Sometimes people already have their minds made up. And we can talk and talk and talk and talk until our faces turn blue. If someone's mind is really made up that this is not where I want to be anymore, then it hurts. But people are going to do what they want to do. And that's not a burden for you to then carry. I sit with people all the time, and I do my best to offer tools and strategies that can support them in a positive way, but I can't make them use those tools. I can prepare the dinner, but I can't make them eat the food if they don't want to eat it. And so I would offer you not to hold yourself responsible for that and allow yourself grace for your process to take place. And so now what I'm offering to you is working the stages for yourself so that you can get yourself back to a healthy place. Because now all of your areas and your dimensions of wellness have cracks in them, and they are starting to unravel at some level. Your emotional state is unraveling, your social, your physical, your intellectual, your environmental, even things you're not looking at, your financial, your spiritual, if you have, you know, a spiritual background. All those things are now impacted by this one single event that is now controlling how you show up in a room, how you show up for yourself, how you show up for your family. And so I would offer that you talk to someone about that so that it does not eat away at your, at who you are, at your core. The result of what happened doesn't feel good, and it won't feel good, but you can't hold yourself responsible for that and blame yourself for the end result of that. So try to find someone that you can have a conversation with and not hold on to that, Dr. Brown.
And folks, I believe wholeheartedly through years of interaction that the person that would be best for you to talk to would be Dr. Clark. While we're not any schedule of how we do what we do, I'm going to ask her to pass on some level of information so that they can make contact and reach out to you because obviously we're giving this some serious attention. You know, who wants to see somebody in pain? So give her a call at
818-646-6608. Or you can contact me at info@rotm.la. Send me an email and I will respond accordingly.
Thank you for that, Dr. Clark. Now let's go back and pay attention to our kids, because I think that was a very powerful question that was presented last week. Do kids grieve? And at what age do they grieve, if they do? For example, many people think that where kids are kind of numb, brain dead, they don't remember yesterday. I'm going to give you a great example. I have a burn on my left, on one of my arms, okay? And I can still see it today. Nobody in the family wants to tell me how it happened. I mean, we're talking a long time ago. And I don't have the foggiest. So can you shed some light on do kids feel grief, children? I'm talking about how far do they go back? Is it from the beginning when they first had to experience that smack on the rear end that forced them to breathe? Anyway, let's see what you've got to share with us about that topic.
Children and babies and young people definitely grieve. And so how any child or young person grieves when they have lost someone depends on many factors, such as their age, their gender, what developmental stage they're at, their personality, the ways that they usually react to stress and emotion, the relationship with person who has died. Because remember, the impact of grief is directly correlated to the relationship, right, and the label that you have with that person. Earlier experiences of loss or death, family circumstances, how others around them are grieving, and the amount of support around them. So there are many, many factors that come into play that contribute to how and if and when our babies, our children, and our teenagers grieve. So
okay,
babies and
doctor,
children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I got to go with you. Excuse me for cutting you off. The question that comes to mind immediately when you included that they're dependent on their gender. Can you elaborate on that? Because I'm starting to think, well, if it's a girl, she's going to feel a certain way, but the boy doesn't get to feel that way. She has some light there.
So, yes, you have that very stereotypical process, right, that girls are more emotional, right, and our boys are more physical. So girls naturally express things in a more emotional way, and guys are the more aggressive ones in the process. And so you might have a young kid who has experienced, you know, loss. For example, take our kids in foster care, right? They think that this little three-year-old boy or this two-year-old boy is just a bad kid, and he's just aggressive, and he's always fighting, and he's lashing out at people. And then you might have another two-year-old or three-year-old, and it's a girl. And this little girl seems like she's always, you know, she's always sad and she's always crying. But both of them have experienced the loss, right? They've had the loss of being removed from their family. And so there's just something innate about the physicalness of the male gender. Not saying that our girls can't be, but it's more expected that our boys or our males act in a more aggressive way, right? So if we go back, when we look at our babies, our children, and our teenagers, sometimes they may appear as if they're unconcerned, right? Because they continue to do their usual activities. And so oftentimes adults will assume that they're not aware of what's going on. They're not aware of the death. They're not aware of the loss, or that they're not even affected by it. But in their own way, there's still an impact on them. And so when you look at babies, children, and teenagers, they grieve in bursts, right? So there's a period of time where it looks like they're having all these issues and things are going on. And then at other times, they'll look for reassurance and comfort in the normal routines and activities of their day, right? So babies, if you break it down by age group, developmental age levels, say babies and toddlers from 0 to 2 years old, they don't really understand the concept of death, but they can respond to a change in their environment. So if something has happened and there's been a loss in the family, they feed off of what's going on in the environment. They will experience the feelings of the loss and the abandonment and the insecurity if a significant person is missing. They may not have the actual language to express how they're feeling, but they will pick up on the distress from the environment around them. That's why they say even in the womb, whatever it is that the mother is feeling, the baby's feeling that as well. So if mom's pregnancy is full of stress and full of turmoil, when she gives birth, that's how that coming here, full of stress and full of turmoil. It's the same thing. So it's common for extended family and friends to often look after children following this whole mourning and grieving process, right? And they can benefit, the babies and the kids can benefit from someone staying close to them and still providing them with some support. And so what might some reactions look like, some common reactions look like amongst this age group? You might see some increased crying and irritability. They might become very clingy, wanting to be held more. They might be looking for the person who has passed away. They may have become a little anxious around strangers. And then sometimes they may even withdraw and appear less interested in playing or eating, and may even have a loss of appetite. And sometimes they may even regress into previously reached milestones. So say at 2 years old, you have this fully potty trained toddler, and then you have this loss take place. They may start to regress, and now you're wondering, well, why are they now using rushing on themselves all the time? It could be very well connected to that loss and that grief. And so when we go to support our young babies, we want to make sure that we are holding, that we are cuddling them more, that we are trying to restore that sense of security that they have lost. Try to keep them in as much of a routine as possible and be calm for as much as we can, have a calm demeanor around them and speak in a calm manner. Provide them with whatever little security blankets they may have or comforters they may have, their favorite teddies, to try to give them, again, some sense of security. We want them, if we ourselves are full of the grief and carrying the pain, we may not be the best person to give them that comfort. We might need to call on someone else to come in and say, hey, I need you to be here with me with the babies right now because I can't do it. Because what's going to happen, if you are carrying so much of the pain and you're in that grief moment as well, well, when you go to hold them and when you go to hug them, you're kind of transferring that onto them because, again, they're feeding off of you. And, yes, you may just need to hug and to just love on your child at that moment. You feel better, but you're passing off that uneasiness, and the babies feel that. So if you are carrying that, you may want to call someone in to kind of give you some support with that. Any feedback on that age group, Dr. Brown?
No, I think that you hit it dead on the nose. Great for our listeners to know that our children are connected to us. One of the main things that you stated, which I definitely concur, is that what goes on in the womb, that's transferred to that child. So even if we take a look at the parent who may be going through a grief or a loss while she's pregnant, wouldn't that lead that the child has experienced some type of an emotional characteristics associated with grief, even though they can't talk about it? But definitely,
absolutely,
they know something has happened. Okay, I think it definitely broadens our perspective, and I'm sure our audience as well. I believe you also mentioned a website that you have. Can you share that with the audience again before it's time to wrap up?
Yes, the website is www.rotm.la. The ROTM stands for Renewing of the Mind. So if you type in Renewing of the Mind Wellness Coaching, it should come up. But I noticed that we're running short on our time, as we always do. I do want to make sure, so maybe we'll continue this on Saturday, that we get to our other two categories, because when we look at our preschoolers, our 3 to 4 year olds, and then we want to look at our school age children from ages 5 to 12, and we want to look at our teenagers. So we still have 3 age groups that stages of development that we definitely want to make sure that we highlight. Because I just think that, like you said, Mr. Brown, it gives us a broader perspective that this whole grief and loss concept and experience is not just an adult thing. And in this era of COVID, we definitely know that even our children who had not been exposed to it before COVID have definitely been exposed to it in one way or another. And so if we've seen some shift in how our children have begun to relate or started to carry themselves and have started to show some different types of expressions, we want to stay alert, and we want to kind of take a mental note that maybe the losses and the changes and the transitions that have happened during this time are starting to have an impact on our kids. So we definitely want to make sure that we get those other developmental stages covered within our next couple times meeting together.
Well, we definitely look forward to addressing those other groups. So I would challenge you listeners, bring a notepad. We don't have a problem with you folks if you need to record the session because this is going on public airways anyway. And sometimes you might need to play it back once or twice to really get the gist of what is being shared by Dr. Clark, but also at the same time, when you get ready to go into sessions, it makes it easier to be able to move things along if you have your questions already prepared. But that doesn't mean that something impulsive may come up that you have to address at the same time. You probably noticed she definitely has the skill to be as versatile and as flexible during the conversation as necessary. Because I've thrown some humdingers at her, and she's never flinched. So, Dr. Clark, thank you again. Why don't you go ahead and wrap it up and take it home?
Okay. The words of Dr. Alan Wolfish, he says something along these lines. I may try to protect myself from my sadness by not talking about my loss. I may even secretly hope that the person who died will come back if I don't talk about it. Yet, as difficult as it is, I must feel it to heal it. Trying to protect myself by denying my pain will only lead to more pain. I need to be honest with myself about my feelings and my needs. So just think about that a little bit. And remember to give yourself permission to breathe. So until we meet next time, you guys have a good evening.
Thank you again, Dr. Clark.
Check this out.